This is no ordinary pod. No ordinary pod.
Yes, and it's been 2 weeks since I've heard that beautiful voice by Noah Hemer joining me on the No Ordinary Pod, on the No Ordinary Pod and Radio St. Pete Network. It is a Wednesday, May 15th. At 10:19 a.m. You know, it feels good to get done in the morning. A little more awake, not grogging through the day and have to like, oh man, it's 8 o'clock at night, NBA playoffs run, and we have to, you know, record during the playoffs, stuff like that. But Noah, summer school Noah, how are you doing up there?
You know, day two of summer classes was today. Not really all that amped up about them, but we're going to have a good time. So things are going well. Tallahassee weather's not too bad, not too humid yet. So I'm enjoying it while we got it.
Keyword was yet. Very, very yes. Keyword was yet. It's been raining here. You know, I've been trying to get my golf game back. You know, yesterday, day off from work. Today, day off from work, too. So I guess I can go to the driving range today. I'm like, you know, I'm going to go drive. It's been about an hour and a half, 2 hours at the driving range, fixing my slice, and in the bunker because I played last week. I probably lost 10 strokes in the bunker alone because I just can't hit out of a bunker. So, but rain got in the way. Rain found a way to interfere, as always. So today, I hope we get out there. But we have an interesting show because not a lot is going on in the NFL. You and I have never discussed NBA really on here. So we're going to go through the Bucks stuff, NBA, and then it's only right we got to talk Thrones. I mean, there was some sports, but Aaron Rodgers was in Game of Thrones. So that's a perfect segue for us to talk about, perfect alley for us to navigate through and talk about Game of Thrones on this podcast. So, me lord, Bucks, Jason Pierre-Paul, fractured vertebrae, single vehicle car accident. There's the wording. He was driving in South Florida on Interstate 95, and if people have not driven on Interstate 95, it is a crazy highway to begin with, especially with how people in South Florida drive. So he spins out, collides. The person, his passenger's okay. He fractured his vertebrae. Went to see a bunch of specialists, and Bruce Arians said best case scenario, very best, is 5 to 6 months. Who knows if he's going to play this season? But that leaves a major hole in this defense. So Noah, I wrote an article about this. I'll let you dictate. What does missing Jason Pierre-Paul, the first person since 2005 to have 10 double-digit sacks for the Bucks, since my man Simeon Rice, what does this loss mean for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I think the biggest thing is there's no depth. Like, we have interior D-line depth decently, especially if we end up keeping McCoy somehow. But there's just no depth. Noah Spence has been the offseason hero since he got drafted by the Bucks and has yet to produce. We signed the Broncos' old outside linebacker, Shaquille Barrett, who was buried behind Von Miller, Bradley Chubb this past year. And I know that I read an article, he's excited to finally be unleashed and play in a similar style of attacking defenses. You know, Broncos have always had that attacking defense going to come at you, very physical. And so I know with Todd Bowles manning the defense now, I think it'll be a good fit. But outside of that, who do we have rushing the passer? Like, Levante David's not a pass rusher. Devin White is not an edge rusher. Devontae David's not an edge rusher. The DN that we drafted out of
Iowa
is not an edge rusher. So that's the biggest thing for me is where's the depth and who's going to be stepping up and do we even have the bodies right now to produce a pass rush? Because the Bucks had such a long the Bucks gave quarterbacks so much time to throw. And that was the main issue with the defensive coverage always falling apart is because we couldn't get to the quarterback, weren't getting pressure in the face, and then our DBs were just getting burned by just NFL receivers, which it seems as if every team has at least one awesome NFL receiver. Got to be able to get to the quarterback. Got to be able to make him uncomfortable. Can't make him uncomfortable, you're just going to keep getting easy throws, especially when you're playing against the likes of Drew Brees, Cam Newton, and honestly, even Matt Ryan. So,
and also it didn't help that we weren't creating that much pressure, and we had an absolutely terrible secondary. We'll get to the secondary in a second because we got to talk about Vernon Hargraves third, what's going on with him. But I'm going to read you our defensive end depth chart. We're not going to Shaquille Barrett's going to be rushing the passer. He'll have his hand in the dirt. He'll be rushing the passer. But outside of JPP, we have Carl Nassib, who high motor player, and he actually played well for the Bucks last year. Noah Spence, workout warrior. William Golston, old Michigan State guy who has bounced around the league. Patrick O'Connor and Anthony Nelson. And you know what's funny? If you had to take a guess who Anthony Nelson's NFL comp was, who do you think it was?
I don't know. He's pretty similar to Carl Nassib.
That was his comp. Carl Nassib. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
So we have two Carl Nassibs essentially rushing the... Hopefully they didn't just pick that because they're both white. I really hope that NFL draft people don't do that, but we're not going to get into that issue. But essentially, if we keep McCoy, our third down pass, our pass rushing unit will be McCoy, Nassib, some rotation of Nelson, Spence, maybe Vita Vea can stay in shape and not get in stage, be in football shape from the beginning of the season and be the interior pass rush, and Shaquille Barrett. And Shaquille Barrett had a PFF grade of 82.6 as an edge rusher. Was like the 27th best edge rusher, edge player in the NFL in 2017. So he's now 26 years old. He's entering his prime. But now, you said he's excited to have this new role. He's going to be the focal point of a pass rush now. So instead of having Von Miller on one side and Derek Wolfe up the middle and DeMarcus Ware was gone by then, but Garrett Wolfe up the middle and just the aggressiveness of Denver's defenses that they always have, he's going to be the focal point of a pass rush. We'll see if he can shoulder that load. I thought this was a great signing for the Bucks, but I thought it was going to be the bookend. I mean, could JPP, Barrett, and Nassib with Vea, McCoy, and then the blitzing schemes that Todd Bowles has, because he's one of the most blitz-friendly pass defensive callers in the NFL, but he didn't generate a lot of pressure with those, with the amount of blitzing and rushing five men or more. That defense got me excited a little bit. Now with this, does the JPP create any more doubt in your head that we passed on Josh Allen? Because we like to talk about hindsight because it's just something that just what we do and stuff like that. But the move to pass on Josh Allen or even Ed Oliver, most for my sake, Josh Allen, for a middle linebacker, seems like it's a bad move at this very juncture.
I don't know if I would constitute it as a bad move because we solidified a very key part of the defense. Quan, whenever he played, him and Levante, when they played together, were awesome whenever they were both healthy and on the field. And I think you massively upgrade in both football IQ and then just overall athleticism with Devin White over Quan. Obviously, hindsight's 20/20, and if you knew JPP wasn't going to be serviceable this year, then you would highly, highly consider trying to take Allen at five or just even try to finesse getting another, maybe to take another pass rusher instead of and one less DB, something of that nature. But that's not how it panned out. I don't think they made the wrong decision. It'll be interesting to see if they can bring anyone in. Especially if they can deal McCoy in some way and then get some guy that's in a contract year plus maybe a late pick or something like that. That's really like the best case scenario I can see. I don't really see the Bucs ever getting like any second, third round value for McCoy, because why would they? The Bucks are in such a salary cap cringe, and any team that's trading with them knows that. And they're like, you can't even sign your rookies right now. Like, you got to get rid of guys. And so we would be doing you a favor by taking on this contract so you can just field a team.
Yeah.
So it's tough, but no, I don't think it was the wrong decision.
So I feel like that's, all right, we'll just go to this. Yeah, before we get there, have you been seeing this not, I don't know if it's a debate, but the conversation happening on Twitter and stuff and podcasts and stuff where the pass rush versus pass coverage argument. Have you been seeing that on Twitter?
Not as like frequently, but I have seen it on Twitter before.
Where do you lie on that? Do you value getting elite pass rushers versus having elite pass coverage? Like, what? It's tough to judge which matters more. But we just saw the Patriots win a Super Bowl because their secondary is unbelievable. So what? Would you rather, because we're going to get to this, because the Bucks right now have a very inexperienced but very talented secondary. But now we have a very lackluster pass rush. So if our secondary steps up, I don't even know how to phrase the question. It's just, where do you lie on the pass rush? Would you rather have a dominant pass rush, say, get rid of the Jaguars secondary. Would you rather have the Would you rather the Jaguars pass rush or Jaguars secondary?
That's a great question. That's tough, because what I was thinking when you were posing the question is, I think of it more of like on a spectrum. But the thing is I would take D-line pass rushing if it came with depth. You were at least two deep at every position. Like two solid deep. Like you're going to have a difference between your starters and but the difference between Von Miller and Shaquille Barrett, like whenever Von got spelled, like that's a solid, very solid two deep. So if you had something like that, where the two deep's nice, I'll take the pass rush because that's just less time that the quarterback is going to have to throw. But if you're not going to be too deep, then I'd rather have the better secondary.
Interesting.
Because I think ball hawking safeties are, in terms of just defending the pass, I think ball hawking safeties can really change the game. Like we've seen the way people like Ed Reed changed the game, the way that Troy Polamalu can change the game. Even a long Patriot guy that's been there for so long, Patrick Chung, the way he comes in and influences a game. What's his name? The Legion of Boom, the way those DB, like I know that they should have won more. That's a crazy thing. But the Legion of Boom in Seattle with Earl Thomas and that DB set was awesome. And then the thing is when you have awesome secondary, you don't need necessarily high top end pass rushers everywhere. Like you can just have one really awesome guy and be pretty average across the rest of the board. But if you're gonna have an average secondary and awesome and bulk up on the D line, you can't really have too many holes on that D line. Because you have to constantly generate pressure.
I'm looking up some pressure rate. Because I feel like sacks can be a misleading stat. Because some teams like the Chiefs who led the league in sacks, they get more opportunities for sacks because teams are just throwing consistently and playing catch up. So pressure rate. Playoff field's 12. How many do you think of the top in the top 10? How many playoff teams do you think were in the top 10 in pressure rate?
7.
Nope. 5. The Chiefs, Saints, Chargers, Eagles, Texans, and Colts were all outside of the top 10. The top 10 went Rams, In top 10 order, Rams, Steelers, Bears, Bills, Jags, Patriots, Ravens, Cowboys, Vikings, Panthers. So, but the thing is, the Patriots have the best secondary, but they still generate a lot of pressure. So it's just, this is just a thing that doesn't matter. It's what you do. You build a solid defense, and you have a great coach, get everyone in position. That's it. So whether you build from the back, like the Eagles build from the front, but they also have Malcolm Jenkins in the back end. Teams like the Rams have a phenomenal D-line, but they also invested great smart deals in Tlaib, Marcus Peters, although he was terrible, LaMarcus Joyner, and players like that. Steelers don't have the best secondary and got torched for it. Bears, solid front to back. Bills, solid front to back. Jaguars, solid front to back. Ravens, solid front to back. Like, there's just a lot of different things. You have to build a unit, and if you play as a unit, I feel like you can, it's, this positive results will happen. But let's move on to, from D-linemen to pass rush versus pass coverage, to Vernon Hargraves. And essentially, he's just not practicing because he's just not mentally there. Is that what it is?
It's either that or some physical limitation.
He said he needed to get his mind right. So,
for what? You had all the playoffs to watch and get your mind right.
We already extended his fifth year option, so I don't know what the cap problem will be. But he's sitting there as a monumental bust, phenomenal bust, in the worst way possible. And he has watched the Bucs draft 6 defensive backs in the past 2 years. So Bruce Arians is clearly sending a message to him. Or the fact, because Bruce Arians said you have to ask him what's wrong while he's not out there. So do you see Vernon Hargraves on this team? Because honestly, I feel like he should man the slot. But it doesn't seem like he's in a position to fight for his spot with the likes of Carlton Davis, MJ Stewart, Ryan Smith, Sean Bunting, Jamal Dean. You know, there's just a long list of DBs that have just been added to this team. So I don't, where do you think we're going to cut, release, or try to trade Vernon Hargraves?
If he doesn't take the wake-up call that Arians has given him, and which is essentially, in my opinion, is, hey, yo, man up. Like, yeah, we got competition. You were a first-round pick. Prove it. Show your worth. And if you're scared, you will not be on this team. If he is scared to play, he will not be on this team. He can't be. He right now, it seems as if he's scared to compete because he's scared that they'll outshine him. That's how I take it. So it goes, instead of putting myself out there, I'll just sit on the sideline and let the rookies take the reps. But he's not good enough to say that. Like, he came on a little bit towards the end, but like, he has not shown consistent performance that is going to be like, oh yeah, you're a vet, bro. Like, you're good. You don't need to push your body. Like, Rondae Barber at the end of his career took practices off, you know? He didn't need the practice.
Apparently, he was active and like paying attention and attended meetings and stuff, but
yeah, but that's not competing.
Yeah, I know. And Arians said that he gave Hargraves, I'm reading an article from Tampa Bay Times, Arians gave Hargraves high praise early this offseason, like his potential to perform in the defense's heavy man coverage on the outside. But he's on the books for $9 million this season. This is great. Carlton Davis left Tuesday's practice with an apparent injury, which gave rookie corners Sean Murphy Bunting and Jamal Dean first team defensive reps. So I'm just reading those things. Sorry, Mike Edwards, the team's fourth round pick from Kentucky, saw first round picks, and Devin White did as well and intercepted a Jameis Winston pass in 11-on-11. Which, I mean, everyone gets Jameis Winston interceptions these days. So all the young kids jumped out. right away. It looked like they might have been here. Look like they fit right in. All these young guys and even have good ball skills. Turnover is something really preach. Okay. Sounds like we're on the right track. That's what I like to hear. But whether Hargraves VH3 is a part of that or not, We'll see. I mean, rooting for him. He's a top 10 pick. Local kid from Wharton, went to Florida, was a monster in the SEC. So let's see. As we were talking about JPP and stuff like that, I texted you about it, I think. And that's Telvin Smith. And Telvin Smith blindsided the NFL, blindsided the Jaguars. He has every right to. He's a human being. With an announcement that he's taking at least the 2019 NFL season off. It's like, if there's more to life than football, he wants to be with his family, worry about his own health, and all that stuff. And it's refreshing to hear. It's not refreshing, should be the right word. But it's just seeing the reaction around the league, especially from former Seminoles, especially people who are around him at FSU, like Iowa and stuff like that. It's kind of shocking. It's shocking because this guy was the leader of the Jacksonville team, one of the best defenses in the league the past couple of seasons. He was the leader of the national championship team, bar none, the guy. I gotta find this stat. Like, he's one of the most productive tacklers in the history of the NFL in the first six seasons. Interceptions, fumble, turnover. He's just a phenomenal running linebacker. And the fact that he's stepping away from the game is going to very much hurt the Jaguars. But the NFL, because he's such a positive person, he likes to talk a lot of smack, but it's not something we see. It's just an awesome, awesome football player, and it's sad to see him step away. But when you're in a position to have that luxury to step away from something and get your mind right, whatever he has to do, blessings on you, good for you, but we'll miss you on the football field.
Yeah, it was nice to see that it wasn't a WTF, like, what are you doing type, why are you abandoning your team type of reaction. Everyone was, from what I saw, supportive but shocked that he announced it, because like you said, he was the guy and still is the guy. And when you watch him, he's electrifying. He's so fast, quick to the ball, hard hitter. But it's nice to see that he has taken the liberty to, if he's not ready mentally, that he's taking the time off while he can, getting himself right before it is too late. Because sometimes you just keep digging yourself a hole. You don't put the shovel down instead you just keep digging, thinking that if you just keep working at it, eventually you'll be where you need to be. But he's dropping the shovel, getting his stuff right, doing what he's got to do, and I have a lot of respect for it. Wish him the best, always.
Do you think the Bucks? I know that Devin White is a Mike linebacker, just like Miles Jack. We think the Bucks and Jags could trade Josh Allen for Devin White, since that'd be a dream swap.
That's what I just was thinking about, but I don't think they ever would.
Oh, no.
But
no.
I don't think either team, but it would be nice.
Yes. All right. Any other NFL things you want to talk about? We'll draft real quick before we move on to the NBA, which is just it's just phenomenal to hear the NBA. Any college football, any news on the recruiting front in Lincoln, Nebraska?
I've been following this. There's this one, I guess, law reporter that I found on Twitter that I started following, and she's been part of the basketball trials, the college basketball trials with the pay, and they're relating it to football and back and forth and how all that's panning out. And they're still probably a couple months away from finalizing and coming to terms and striking up a deal or coming down with a verdict of whatever's going to happen. But I read an article yesterday saying that the NCAA, and I guess we are getting closer to seeing them get compensated in some way. But the thing is the NCAA does not want the language to be that they are paying athletes. So when I hear that, my initial thought is, are they going to allow them to just make money off their likeliness? Which, in my opinion, is the most fair thing to do.
Did you see? Okay, so you know a little bit about the college stuff. So, so I'm trying to. I have an ESPN Plus account, but I deleted my history yesterday, and I lost my. I need to find my login again. I'll do that afterwards. So did you see the thing about Clemson's basketball coach getting fired? He got fired for some benefits, and apparently, he is on record saying, when they're trying to recruit Zion Williamson, which is a perfect segue, we're going to talk about Zion in a second, about Zion, and they were pretty much saying, hey, we'll treat you like a football player. And that has caused some alarm for the Clemson football program, just a little bit. And now Clemson's going to do some inside looking and like look at their just do like an overview of the football staff and the whole recruiting process. But those words kind of sound like, you know, there's some shady stuff going on at Clemson a little bit, you know.
There's shady stuff going on everywhere, and that's I saw this tweet one time, and it said, name something that you know is wrong or corrupt or bad in this world, yet you love it regardless. And my answer immediately was college football. I hate how much I love college football because there are bag men everywhere. I was on a plane one time with Nino, and we sat next to this guy. We thought we were going to only have me and Nino in the aisle, and then he was like the last person on the plane. And so we were both, and he sat in that seat, and we were both just devastated. I was so mad. But the guy ended up, he worked, I want to say, in the recruiting offices at Bama for a couple of years. And he was telling me kind of how things are finessed back and forth. And he goes, dude, it's happening everywhere. And if you think it's not, then you're just ignorant and stupid, because it 100% is happening everywhere you go. He said how they kind of loophole around it is, you know, like the Reggie Bush situation back in SC, they paid for his mom's living, paid for an apartment, had her move closer, things like that. The notorious thing that kind of happens is, let's just use Zion for example, just as a name. They're recruiting Zion, and one of their pitches, it goes, hey, if you come here, we know that your uncle's looking for a job. We have four of our main boosters all own car dealerships. We can get him a job at this car dealership as soon as you sign. Type of thing.
Or like an AAU coach comes on and joins the coaching staff. That happens everywhere too.
That is a big one. So it's like, it's things like that where it's just like loopholes. They actually have put restrictions on that for high school coaches, football coaches. They don't, it's a lot more difficult to hire good players, like high prospects, old high school coaches. Like there's like a latent period, like where you can't be hired if you were a part of that kid's recruiting process. The interesting part of it is, like, Devin Bush's dad was a coach at Michigan, and that's where Devin Bush went to school. So, but he didn't start coaching there till Devin Bush got there. So
I wonder how that works.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, that's something that's been developed, that's been coming along, that's interesting for me to see, because after they cut, the most devastating part about players not getting paid, and I think most people would agree with this, is, yeah, you know, they're kind of getting gypped out, but they still get pampered. They still get under the table perks and things like that. You know, they get everything paid for. FSU players get two massages a week if they want, you know, things like that. Like, they're pampered as can be. But the thing moving forward is, I don't know, did you see what's happening in the new Madden?
No.
They're doing like I think they have like 7 or 8 schools that they have signed on, but you can, from my understanding, is they're going to have like a college football playoff thing.
I saw that before.
So they're incorporating that a little bit more into, EA Sports is incorporating that into a little bit, and is, I knew it wasn't just all of a sudden they're going to be like, boom, we got this game back. It's going to be a slow, gradual, like, how can we work the fine prints of the law to get this to work again? Because there is a lot of money being lost by not making college football game video games, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I never used to play Madden. I only played NCAA. And then I only started playing Madden because there was no more NCAA to play.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I'm keeping up on it. If there's anything that comes down verdict wise, with this case and what's getting ruled with, college football likeliness, college football players getting played, college athletes in general getting paid. I'll keep you posted, but that's about it. For me at least, that's about the biggest thing happening in the college football world right now.
Yeah, we're years away from that stuff happening. I think we're years away from the video game. I talked to the EA. I talked to someone I know that works for EA Sports, and that person says that, you know, it's almost a lost cause getting the NCAA to agree on that stuff. We'll see. That'd be awesome. I mean, for your sake, especially because I know you just go. You'd be in season 2065 with Nebraska national championships the whole season and stuff like that. Have your dynasty built, Coach Noah Hemer, and there's just such a cool market for that. Because like you can get like the training facilities in there now. Like you can take people on tours, like virtual tours. It's there's a lot of room for improvement in that. But yes, yeah, so let's transition. We're at the halfway point. Let's transition to my beloved, or not my beloved soccer, because I'm still upset about Liverpool falling short. My beloved NBA. And it's been a pretty entertaining NBA playoff, to say the least. You know, the first round happens. There was a couple. I mean, the Warriors got pushed to 6 games by the Clippers. There was a fight, of course. That was awesome. Spurs Nuggets went 7. Damian Lillard with the moment of the playoffs already walked off against OKC. East was kind of lackluster. I mean, let's be honest. Every series ended in 5 except for the Celtics and Bucks who swept. What was the other series in the West I missed? Rockets and Jazz. Then you go to the Rockets-Warriors series. This is the Rockets' time. Durant goes down when it's a 1-point game and it's game 5. Steph Curry and the Warriors just chip away, just keep balling. Then they blow him out in the final game, but Curry drops 33 in the second half. 20 in the fourth. The Nuggets Blazers go 7. Bucks dismantle the Celtics. Raptors and 76ers go 7, and Kawhi hits
the bounces heard around the world. Man.
And then he showed emotion. This was just everyone's been talking up the semifinals of the conference round for so long. And for once, they lived up to the hype. And now we got conference finals. And last night's game, unless the Blazers are playing the Warriors. And I think last night's game, Warriors won by 22 points without Durant. They don't need Durant in the series. They may not even need, they're going to need Durant in the finals if they play the Bucks and the Raptors. Actually, yeah, they'll need Durant in the finals. But as the biggest Dame fan ever, unless the Blazers make some serious coaching changes, it's going to be blowout in game 2. It'll be a blowout in game 3. Probably sneakily win game 4. Get Durant back for game 5. Get him back up to speed a little bit to NBA conditioning levels. Are you considered a casual NBA fan?
How would you define a casual?
You have league pass, so you're not a casual. So you're probably
I would say above average. Okay, but like I would consider you tier 1.
I appreciate that.
And I would say casual. I would say casual would be anywhere between tier 3 and 4.
So you're in between tier 2 and 3.
I would say I'm a low tier 2, high tier 3.
Like that, high potential for tier 3. Maybe a this non-LeBron playoff is going to vault you up into the tier two level. So as a tier 2 fan, I like high tier 3 better. That says you have more potential than a low 2-3. Low tier 3. God, I can't say these words today. what What are your thoughts on the playoffs as a whole? And what are your thoughts on the – because we're going to talk about Kawhi versus Giannis in a second. What are your thoughts on the playoffs so far of the whole? There's been a lot of great moments. We had one walk-off series walk-off winner in the last 20 years, and now we have two in the same playoffs. Thoughts on the Blazers, Warriors, everything. Just let me hear it, Noah.
Well, my favorite I knew this playoffs was going to be wild when at least the – yeah, it was when game three of Blazers Nuggets went to 4-0.
I forgot about that. I even watched that whole game.
I watched that entire second half. I was out whatever night of the – I think that was a Friday. I was out, and I was watching it at the bars, and I watched it through 1-0. And after that first overtime, I was like, all right, I'm going to run home and try to catch this back into the game. So I'm running home. I'm watching it on my phone. And then my phone died while I was in the Uber. So I run upstairs. And as soon as I get upstairs, second OT ends. And it's still tied. And I'm like, this is awesome. Free basketball. And I could not believe that went to 4-0. It was so – but it's been awesome. The Bucks just look so dominant, and I don't know if that was indictment on the Celtics and their lack of continuity and the Kyrie, Gordon Hayward, and all their young guys getting exposed and their lack of chemistry. I don't know if it's an indictment on Brad Stevens not being able to get those personalities and get a game plan together with all that talent. My favorite player on the Celtics has always been Terry Rozier.
Did you see his interviews?
Yes, oh, I did. Yeah. That's why he's one of my favorites, because he has this fire about him. He is very real, very transparent when he wants to be, but he balls. And he comes off the bench, but he balls out every single time. He's like the Energizer Bunny. So I'm excited to see, is he going to be Celtic next year?
In the interview, he said that if they bring everyone back, he won't be.
So he's not under contract with them now?
He's a restricted free agent. For people who don't know, so say he gets offered a contract. This happened last year with the Celtics and Marcus Smart, where Marcus Smart thought he was going to get like a four-year, $80 million contract, 40 or $60 million contract. It wasn't on the market, so he went back to the Celtics for like 4 years, $44 million. Good deal. Good deal for both. Especially because teams are smarter now. They're not going to just destroy their whole cap for a guy like Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart's valuable, but he's not someone who's not like a guy who's going to win you a game. He's a game changer, but he's not going to win you the game. So what that means is, so say a team that needs a point guard, I don't know, Orlando Magic, Phoenix Suns, say they offered Rozier 5 years, $80 million, or any contract. The Celtics will have, I think, 5 days to match that contract, and if they match the contract, he's a Celtic. So the unrestricted means he can do whatever he wants. Restricted means you're on your rookie deal, and the team you're with has the right to match that contract. So I don't think if Kyrie comes back, he's gone. But if he does, but if Kyrie's gone, which people may think, all that, then there's an opening for Terry to come back. But what he said he sacrificed the most stuff, and all of these things, it's not looking like he's going to be back. And I want him to be gone. I mean, he was terrible in Game 7 against Cleveland last year. He was terrible when he had some opportunities this year. But as a guard, as a guy who's playing 30, 35 minutes on a team making a deep playoff run, albeit in a weak East, you have the ball in your hand more. You're shooting more. You're engaged. When you're getting 15 minutes a game, and now when you're coming off the bench, you're not the focal point because you have Gordon Hayward, who I'm not even going to talk about that guy. It's Gordon Hayward, I think he was good in Utah, but that contract, he was never worth max money. Never was worth max money. Anyway, but you come off the bench and you're running the show. Now you're not yet. And then, because now you're staggering Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum's minutes, so they want their touches too. It was just a mess in Boston, and I don't see Terry going back there.
I hope not. I hope he finds his way on a team where he can kind of be not the like number one guy, but can be like the second, third guy, but starts at the one, and allows allows him to just fully invest in everything that he's doing, and especially with how much he sacrificed in Boston, or how much he claims he sacrificed in Boston. I think whichever team gets him next will be very happy with the type of player they are getting, because that's just a guy, at least from the interviews, it seems, a guy coming for vengeance and wants to prove everyone that he can still ball.
I would like him going to Phoenix. He maybe even a sign and tra- not like a sign and trade, because I know Josh Jackson just got arrested in Erling Loud, the Suns forward. But him going to Phoenix, where he's not going to be the primary scorer at all, he's going to be the defender. He's going to get shots because Devin Booker is going to command a bunch of attention. DeAndre Ayton's going to be there. He can run a pick and roll with Ayton. There just won't be as much pressure. They have the cap space, a 3-year. Because a lot of teams are doing, I don't know if Rozier is the guy who's going to continue to bet on himself with a short contract, but a lot of like the superstars are taking like 2 to 3 year deals because they want to make their money quick and then they set this up for the next contract. Like Paul Millsap has a $30 million, signed a 3-year like $90 million contract, and you would think Paul Millsap's not worth $30 million. That's like Aaron Rodgers money, which I think is hysterical. I think how NBA players make, like Evan Turner's making $19 million out in Portland to play 18 minutes on the second thing. Gordon Hayward broke his leg and is terrible, and he's going to make like $30 million. I guess going Timofey Mozgov played like 2 games for the Magic and made $18 million. Luol Deng is going to get paid like $9 million for the next 2-3 years because his contract got stretched from the Lakers. Like, it's the cap boom of 2016 just needs to have a book written about it. I think Rozier's going to want like a 4-year deal. Are the Suns willing to offer him that? Especially because the Suns have the sixth pick in the draft. We're going to get to the lottery in a second. They have the sixth pick. They're not going to get John Morant. They're not going to get Jarrett Culver. They could get Jarrett Culver or DeAndre Hunter, but they're not going to get RJ Barrett or Zion, obviously. So do they value one of those wings, or do they value Kobe White or someone along those lines? It's interesting, but there's not that many teams that need a point guard in the NBA, which is saying something, because there's just guards everywhere. I mean, I'm going to look at the list right now of teams like Warriors. I mean, come on, they don't need a point guard. Raptors are not going to take their chance on Terry Rozier. Lakers, no. Rockets, no. 76ers don't have the cap space for him. Blazers, no. Celtics, funny. Bucks, no. Nuggets, no. Spurs, no. Nuggets, meh. Not the Nuggets. Thunder, no. Knicks have 7,000 point guards. Cavaliers, no. Heat, no. Jazz, no. I actually like the Jazz as a spot for him. Nets, no. Clippers, no. Bulls, yes. Pistons, Mavericks, no. Magic, yes, but they have Markelle Fultz. Kings, no. Pacers, yes. I don't think they're going to blow their cap space on Rozier. Timberwolves, not really. Suns, yes. Pelicans, no. Hornets, depends if Kemba leaves. Hawks, no. Wizards, no. Grizzlies, no. So like I'm saying, there's not a lot of spots for him to go.
Which is tough.
It is tough.
But other than that, in terms of NBA playoffs, I've just been... Kawhi's been my favorite player to watch. I love watching Klay Thompson and Steph Curry with no KD. I love watching
you and everyone else on NBA Twitter, man. They love Steph and Klay getting 30 shots.
It's awesome because, like, KD, you know, he gets in an ISO and he's Godzilla in the lane because he's so long and he's so tall, and it doesn't matter if you play awesome defense because he's just going to shoot right over the top of you. He's going to take you to the hole. He's quicker than you. He has longer steps than you. He has longer arms than you. He has better shot than you. His basketball IQ is probably better than you. Like,
KD's the best player in the world. KD's the best player in the world.
I hate to agree. Like, he is, but Steph Curry is, I think Steph is the best. I think Steph brings the biggest value to a team. In terms of, like, actual basketball, I think KD... It's hard to really argue with, what is he, like 6'10", 6'11", with that
he's
wingspan. And he can drive,
KD's,
dribble.
He doesn't like to admit he's 7 foot for some reason, but he's 7 foot.
So he's seven, yeah, so he's 7 feet, can bring the ball down the court, can shoot the ball. It's like a modern-day Wilt Chamberlain, essentially. And yes, he is just such a monster, and he's, and I think in a, on a on a on paper he's the best, but when it comes to like actually performing and winning the games that need to, I don't think he has necessarily the mindset all the time to do it, but Steph Curry literally always does. Like, there's never a time where I'm like, yep, yep, there goes Steph Curry, like, typical that he fluked. But, like, if KD did that, I wouldn't be all that surprised, because KD has burner Twitter accounts. And, you know, I think Russell Westbrook was the issue in OKC. I think that's becoming abundantly clear.
Yeah. Hey, good job, Russ. Get those nice, triple doubles, bro. I love Russ, though. I'm not gonna stand for Russ slander, but I can't stand it.
No, not at all. But I think that he was a problem, and him and KD didn't mesh. And I enjoy watching Steph Curry more. I think Steph Curry's better, and I agree with the rest of NBA Twitter. I think like watching Klay just literally move around, it's like he's like a receiver running routes, just like getting a pick, running a route, breaking an angle, coming around, getting a little handoff, shooting it. Splash, literally every time. Shoot, splash, shoot, splash. The craziest thing about last night's game is I was watching, it was probably like 5-6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and the free throw discrepancy was unreal. I want to say it was like, here, I got it. The Blazers shot 31 free throws. The Blazers had shot like 24, 25 free throws, and the Warriors had only shot 9.
Mm-hmm. It was 16. When I looked at it, it was 16-3.
Yeah, and I looked at the score and I go, that just shows that the Warriors just aren't really missing tonight. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just hitting everything, and if they're not, they're just not getting the board. But they're getting awesome looks. Because can you explain to me the thought process behind what the Blazers were doing with the pick being set, like at the top, and then their bigs weren't coming up, and Klay Thompson, Steph Curry were literally just getting wide open shots.
What's the
mindset behind, like, rationale?
Have you heard of Can't Play Cantor? There's this thing, Enes Kanter, great offensive rebounder and great offensive talent, but Billy Donovan said when they played the Warriors in that 2016 Western Conference Finals, or I think the year after, he literally said, I can't play Kanter because Kanter can't play defense. He can't move his feet. But they're hell-bent on playing him over Zach Collins and him, or going small and just saying, hey, we have to do this. So what they do is they drop coverage and pick and roll. For some reason, they are scared of the Andrew Bogut, Kevin Looney threat attacking the basket instead of not even trying to trap it, just trying to like help and switch. The way to beat the Warriors is you switch everything. That's what the Rockets do. That's what the Rockets do, because you just have to. Because if you trap a pick and roll, Curry's just going to split the pick and roll with the pass. It's going to be 3-on-2 at Draymond's ball in the hand, and Draymond is he's amazing at that. He has a good floater. He's going to find an open shooter. It's all that. And the thing is that Terry Stotts, the Blazers head coach, afterwards, he said the Rockets blitzed Steph, and he scored 33 points in the second half. And I'm like, did you see the degree of difficulty he was? Steph was out there shimmying on you in the first quarter because you were leaving him wide open. And Klay's going to take his Klay shots. Klay's going to have these difficult shots. This is just a terrible matchup for the Blazers.
I have a question for you. When I saw the Blazers beat the Nugs, I was happy for Dame because Dame's awesome. And especially how he beat OKC, that was so much fun. That was a great series to watch. That buzzer beater in Paul George's face was phenomenal. Oh, yeah. But how do you think, especially with KD being out at least the first two games, how do you think this Western Conference Finals would look if it was Warriors versus Nugs, matchup-wise? Because I thought initially that because to me, the Blazers are like just like the little brother of the Warriors, of like what they want to do. But I felt like the Nugs as a team matched up a little bit better with the Warriors, especially at least trying to defend
them.
They
did, and I was thinking, I'm like, without KD, the Nuggets would throw Torrey Craig, who did a phenomenal job of slowing down Dame in that series, besides game 6 when Dame was just hitting his 37 footers. Torrey Craig would go on him, and Gary Harris, with another very, very solid defender, would chase around Steph, and they would switch. Jamal Murray could hide on Iguodala or someone like that. Just the thing I liked about the Nuggets was is that the Nugget, when the Warriors played the Nuggets after the first game, and everyone's like, oh, they're fighting for the 1-2 seed, the Warriors literally won by like 40 points both times. But the Nuggets were a very good playoff team. Very young team. And the last game that they played, Boogie Cousins destroyed Jokic. There was no Boogie Cousins this time. And the game was going to slow down. And you could prepare for that one singular matchup. So I thought my love for the Blazers and Dame, I would probably have said six. But if I looked at it closely, I probably said Warriors in five. I'd go Warriors in six against Denver. And potentially seven, because Jamal Murray is going to get hot, and I don't see an answer. Draymond's a phenomenal defender, but I don't see Bogut and Draymond and Looney being able to stop Jokic and stuff like that, especially because if you watch the game for the Blazers against the Warriors, they're literally triple-teaming Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, because they're like, Amino, you're not going to do anything. Harkless, you're not going to do anything. Seth Curry was awful last night. Rodney Hood was solid in his small minutes. But you're just not going to do it. Dame was caught in the midair like six times and just got turned the ball over. I don't even know. I'm going to look at the turnover numbers real quick, because it was most likely it was terrible for Dame.
It was 21-14 team-wise.
And Dame had seven of those.
That's the difference right
there. He shot 4 of 12. CJ was 7-19. This is the formula you have to do, though. The formula thing is you're going to have to play Jake Layman. You're going to have to take chances with your lineup and play these athletes, because if you're going to keep playing Cantor 30 minutes and Collins only 18, you're going to get destroyed by 22 every single time. The fourth quarter, the Warriors outscored them 39-23. And that's going to keep happening if you continue to play these lineups. Like, let me look at... Steph was 9 of 15 from 3. Draymond, in 34 minutes, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks, 12 points. Steph, 36 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 steal, 1 turnover. Klay, I love Klay Thompson, man. He's the best.
He is awesome.
26 points. I mean, it's just typical Klay. He had 3 steals. 13 steals to 14 turnovers. That's their offense. That's not even including the 8 blocks they had. It was just, this series is just, I don't think this is going to go well unless the Blazers start switching, play a more aggressive defense, start Zach Collins, play Rodney Hood all the time, plays Jake Layman, because Jake Layman actually had a pretty decent game against the Warriors in the regular season, and he offers you something more than Aminu, and Harkless played a decent game. But he offers you more than Aminu, and you can't play Cantor. It's the truth. Because if you do, you're going to get destroyed. I mean, Cantor, kudos to you. You're fasting. I've heard that 1,000 times. He's fasting. It's Ramadan. Good for you, man. That's cool. Even if you weren't fasting, you're going to get destroyed in this series. And you talk a lot of smack on social media. You better get ready to... This is why. And if Kevin Durant was in this series, I know that... Last quick thing before we move on to the East, the Warriors are a tougher team to defend when Durant is not there, like you were mentioning earlier. If Durant was in this series, it would still be the same result, in my opinion. It would still be the same exact butt whooping, because who can guard Kate? Because then they're starting their Hamptons 5 lineup. And then who is Cantor going to guard? Cantor doesn't have Kevon Looney or Enes Kanter to hide on. It's Warriors, keep doing what you're doing. Blazers, play Jake Layman. Do not play Enes Kanter. Play Zach Collins. Only chance you got. Ty can steal the game. And Damian Lillard, they are blitzing Dame. The Nuggets figured out how to stop Dame. You blitz those pick and rolls 37 feet away from the hoop. Get the ball out of his hands, because there's not a lot of people on the Blazers that can make a plan for the stuff. It's been their Achilles heels forever, and they need a third score. This is why Paul George, I wish Paul George signed with Portland, because it would have been awesome.
Wow, that would have been sweet. Yeah.
He wouldn't have had to be the main man. It would have been awesome. But we can't talk about the pipe dreams because the NBA would go on forever. But speaking of pipe dreams, out east, double entendre too, by the way. Out east, the second and third best player in the world, two of the three best players in the world are going head to head. And I think they're going to guard each other. I think Kawhi is going to guard Giannis. The powerhouse, one of the best teams in regular season history in terms of point differential in the Milwaukee Bucks. Number one offense, number one defense against the Raptors, who are literally just looking like Kawhi. And Kawhi shot 39 times. If it was Kobe, they would have said, oh, he shot 12 of 39. That's how we won. But it's Kawhi, so it's cool, and he made the shot. But I picked the Raptors to win the NBA Finals before the season. I'm sticking to that. I think the Raptors will win in six. I think Milwaukee can have off shooting nights, but they have Giannis, man. I was saying this, and after game one against the Celtics, I was like, I may have spoken too soon. Giannis, we knew LeBron had potential to be a top five player. Giannis has the potential to be legit the greatest player of all time. And I mean that with everything in me. He can't do a pull-up shot, but he can do like a dribble. He can do like, if you watch like him shoot a three, he has to like to take a dribble to get himself in rhythm. And it's like, so it takes him an hour and a half at the free throw line to shoot one free throw. But the best rim, how often do you say the best rim protector in the league is also the best player in transition, is also the most efficient offensive player, also can pass. We'll see if Kawhi can slow down Giannis. Well, that's the blueprint. There's not a single human being on earth who can stop Giannis. This guy is Euro-stepping through four Celtics, through four defenders. And if he's getting fouled, so he's conserving energy by getting fouled, he is... Seriously. KD's better because he can shoot. Giannis is 24. He's going to keep getting stronger. Shaq already said he's better than Shaq was at this time, and Shaq led the Magic to the NBA Finals. This guy legit could be the greatest player ever. Impact offense and defense. We only have 4 minutes, so I know I'm ending it with that statement, but his trajectory is unreal. Potential, we've never seen a limitless potential player like Giannis. That's the best way I can put it.
And what limits, what separates him between like LeBron and KD in terms of being
Giannis
limitless?
Is already a better defender than those two. Giannis can protect the rim better than those two already. And we're going to see Giannis on Kawhi. And Giannis on, and Chris Middleton's going to be there. We'll see what Pascal Siakam didn't do anything against Joel Embiid. What do you think Pascal Siakam's going to do when he's going up against Giannis? NBA Finals, yeah. If we get Warriors, Bucks NBA Finals, which is looking like, Giannis versus KD. KD could probably shoot over him. But Giannis is stronger than him offensively. Giannis can post up, can drive, can pass. He's shooting like above 40% in the playoffs this year from three. And if that's happening, pack it up. The NBA is Giannis's for the next decade. Just, it's done. People thought the Celtics were the most talented team. Ran through them. Like they were schoolboys. He said in the press conference yesterday, Toronto is not like Boston. We have to win game one. It's a must win. Just trolling teams. Marcus Smart came back, and people were like, oh, Marcus Smart's make a big impact. He looked at the box score. Someone asked, like, did Marcus Smart make a big impact? He goes, looks at the box score. See that Marcus Smart did literally nothing, and goes, nothing. Just... he just has his arrogance. He has his shoe now. Giannis, I'm serious. Colin Coward had to think about taking Zion over Giannis on his show yesterday. He thinks Zion's already a top five player in the NBA. No.
That's ridiculous.
No. Zion's 6'6". He's gonna be dunk. He's gonna be dunking on fools. Giannis is 7'1", and it took him one dribble to get from the other side of the circle at half court to the hoop. The way the NBA is projecting, it's like, he's the MVP. I've never seen anyone like him. LeBron was not LeBron carried the Cavs to the finals. That was a great team. Beat the Pistons. But this guy, Giannis, I'm all in with him. He's unbelievable. Very quickly, because we have to wrap this up. We didn't get to talk Thrones. We're going to talk Thrones a lot next week. Who would you take over Giannis? Like, who in the history of the NBA, who is going to stop Giannis from getting to his spots? Unless you completely collapse the defense, which means he's going to pass to an open shooter. And that's why they lost game one, because Boston made all their mid-range shots and the Bucks missed all their threes. When the Bucks started hitting threes, it was just pack it up. Have fun in Cancun, Boston. You have your little franchise implosion. We're going to the finals. I'm not saying you're going to the finals, though, because I got to pick Kawhi.
I feel like KD's the only one. KD, to my limited basketball knowledge, I say KD and Kawhi former players that were like KD and Kawhi are the only two that could really go head-to-head with Giannis.
Yeah, LeBron in his prime has the strength and the 6'8 high and the height. But this version of Giannis is not even the best version of Giannis we're going to see, which is terrifying.
It is
terrifyingly awesome. And KD's 30. Steph Curry's 30. Zion's 18. I mean, like, Jason Tatum averaged 9 points. And I am so happy that that guy, because I never liked his prospect ability. That's even a word.
I think we just need to, after this series, if the Bucks do end up winning, going to the finals, I think Giannis will be king in the North.
The true king in the North. Oh, man.
The true king in the North.
Dude, I don't even have the words to describe how excited I am for game one tonight on Wednesday night. And the thing is, this is going to be airing on Saturday, so it's going to be game. It'll be game. Each team will be at their through two games, so Kawhi could shut down Giannis, but we'll see. But I mean, the projection that Giannis is on is unlike anything we'll ever see. I'm just under the impression that this is Kawhi's time, that Kawhi is where Giannis is going to be in terms of leading a team like this. Because honestly, if I didn't pick the Raptors to win the NBA Finals before the season, I probably wouldn't pick them. But I love Kawhi. Kawhi's only 27.
Yeah. Really?
He plays. Everyone like a needs grown to watch man. This video. When Kawhi was in his first NBA Finals, I think he was 21 or 20 years old. 21 probably. And LeBron, this is when the Heat won the first NBA Finals when Rayon hit that shot. It was game 5. LeBron's at the free throw line dribbling. They panned to Kawhi checking in. And they pan to LeBron's face. LeBron turns around, sees Kawhi's come in, and makes a face like, man, I got to deal with this guy now. And that was when Kawhi was 20. Now this guy's 27. Locked. I wrote about the article. I said the Bucks. Kawhi guarded Jimmy Butler, the Sixers' best perimeter player. We're going long right now. Sorry, I'm Joe. Talked about how he guarded Jimmy Butler 10.3 possessions per game. He was the fourth most defender. He guarded He guarded Jimmy Butler the fourth most of the Raptors players. Fourth most. So I said, you know what? Like, this is time for Kawhi to do it. So guess what? He guarded Jimmy Butler most of the game. Jimmy Butler went 5 for 14, 1 of 6 from 3, and only scored 16 points. And that's why you won, because his defense is that great. And he was hounding. I can't wait, man. I've been texting your brother for 2 weeks saying we are going to get Kawhi and Giannis, and this is basketball porn. This is everything. Full tilt Kawhi versus full tilt Giannis. I don't even care about the role players. knowing the role players are going to be the deciding factor, but I don't even care about that. Giannis versus Kawhi, buckle up. It's awesome. We didn't even talk lottery. Man, we went long. You know what stopped us? Is that we talked about the Bucks for 25 minutes to start the podcast. But man, it's all good.
Sad, hey, man, right?
Another great episode. We'll be back next week. Maybe we'll come back later this week and talk more. I mean, we had nothing to do. We have content to churn out. So I don't know your schedule. My schedule's kind of lax. So Noah, hey man, you enjoy summer. Enjoy summer ski.
I'm trying my best to enjoy summer ski, but I appreciate
that.
Thanks for having me on once again.
Maybe we'll just have a full Lottery Thrones podcast, and that'll just be the one that doesn't air on the show. But we'll just have one just for our sake. But hey, man, enjoy. Everyone, thanks for checking us out on the No Ordinary Pod, on the No Ordinary Pod Network, and Radio Sapient Network. Everyone have a good day.